Kia ora, folks. You're listening to the Andrew Griffin program on Radio 1. I'm joined here by Turanga and Henry from the acclaimed metal band from Aotearoa, New Zealand, Alien Weaponry. G'day, gang. How you doing?
Kia ora. How are we?
Yeah, morning or atamaria, depending on what time this is airing.
Very good point. I love that you've both got a series of instruments behind you. You got some drums, Henry, and two of you got a beautiful selection of guitars. Oh my god.
Too many.
I'd love to have more than one drum kit behind me, but unfortunately, my place isn't that big.
You can squeeze a lot more guitars in the same space of one drum kit.
If you all had to describe your sound as an alien weapon from science fiction, what would it be? Would it be like a disintegration ray? Would it be a pulse cannon or something?
It's Jango Fett's space mine, bro.
Boing, boing.
Totally. It's the amazing thing ever. It's that build-up, anticipation, and then, you know, all the bang, dude.
I'll tell you what, that's not where my mind instantly went. For people who don't know, we named the band after District 9, and I was thinking there's a plethora, I think, of alien weapons that make up the sound of alien weaponry.
I like that the seismic charge is kind of a progenitor to dubstep. It's like Skrillex. Before we get into talking about the new record, I want to just touch on how metal's doing, because it seems like internationally it's a little bit isolated, a little bit maybe siloed from the rest of the mainstream. Where do you think metal's at?
Right now, it is very popular. I would argue that the biggest thing that's ever happened to metal in the recent years was last year's Olympics. A band that we opened for, Gojira, played the opening ceremony at the Olympic Games. Arguably the biggest, probably one of the biggest events you could ever possibly play at as any kind of musician, let alone a heavy metal musician. So that was quite monumental. But then you've also got, actually, a band that we toured with Gojira, Knocked Loose. We're making some incredible rounds with their hardcore heavy music. They played on Jimmy Kimmel Live, you know, which is pretty sort of odd and unprecedented for music of this genre. And there's a lot going on for heavy metal right now. And I think it's in a closer to mainstream place than it has been.
Some elitists will be absolutely
grumpy about
getting their pants about, right. But you know, hey, if it's meaning that there's going to be more metal and more good metal coming out that people can listen to, I'm all for it, man. Most metal musicians are very into not letting labels and, you know, corporate bodies govern what they are as a band. Give us the money and let us do our shit. that's the Alien Weaponry ethos, at least.
And speaking of good new metal, I mean, this new album is good, and it's new, and it's metal, and it's based in part on Te Ra, the Sun, and its conflict with Maui, who tamed the sun and forced it to go slower to provide sunlight for more people so they could work longer. Wondering, you know, you all have taken, I think, a few years now to publish new tunes. I think it's a 4-year break in between this and your last one. Do you think that slowing down is something that you kind of had to do to get to where you are now?
Well, you know, and that's a sentiment that a lot of the, well, not the audience, I would say, because no one's heard it yet, but the interviewers who have had an opportunity to get their hands on the album, and when they get into that song, you know, that seems to be a sentiment that picks up, you know. So, oh, is this a song about, obviously it talks about this specific story, but does the story, is it a further metaphor for how rushed and fast-paced the world can feel right now? We just need to take, you know, time to remember to take a breath, take a step back and reflect, and not just, you know, bash yourself across the sky. And preferably you can take a step back there without being beaten to all hell by Maui, but...
kind of like the musical equivalent of Bob Ross, Happy Little Mistake. You know, like, we didn't intend for it to have that metaphorical meaning. A lot of our music, a lot of people have their own interpretations of it, and that's one of the awesome things about music, is people can interpret whatever the hell they want.
To just answer your actual question, it was important to take that step back for this album, you know, because there's a lot of things have happened since this album and the second album, and, you know, we sort of had to begrudgingly, I'll say, admit maybe the shortcomings of the second album when we're coming into the approach of this third album, and kind of swallow the pride a little bit and be like, okay, what do we need to do to improve, you know, carry forward the sound, give people the sound that they love and are familiar with, but also try not to be stale, you know?
I think there's a really cool thing about this album is that this is the first time you've played bass in studio, Turanga. Why LA? Were you just there at the time, or did they have something that New Zealand studios didn't.
I mean, funnily enough, when you say that about the bass too, we were just talking about it on the last interview, I'm also playing guitar, because obviously I'm a guitar player. I always joke I'm actually only I'm a bass player professionally and a guitar player passionately. So we and Lewis had to do like all this jumping back and forth, because if he wrote a song, he basically did all the guitar and the bass for it in the studio. And if I wrote a song, I pretty much did all the guitar and bass for it in the studio. But the LA thing came about because of Josh Wilbur's inclusions. This was the first time we worked with Josh Wilbur, veteran heavy metal producer, many albums, many of the greatest heavy metal albums out there, alongside some of the greatest heavy metal bands, and of course, notably Lamb of God. For those who, when they listen to this and open up the track listing, we have a feature by Lamb of God singer Randy Blythe himself. And there was discussion that Josh come out to New Zealand to record, because that's cheaper to fly one person than it is to fly three of us. But his wife was the one that put the halt on that, because she said, "You've been away too long," and he's based out of Los Angeles. So she's like, "You need to stay home and work from LA." So that was ended up being why we recorded it in LA. But it ended up being fine because we were on a Europe tour. Normally, you're either stopping over in Singapore, Hong Kong, or you're doing the LA way to get to Europe, you know, so you're picking one of the things. So we were already in Europe. We had to come home to New Zealand, so we just flew to LA, did the album, and then flew home straight after tour.
Nice. How was it recording in another country? Did it feel a bit different to when you recorded the last two?
You know, there's definitely some interesting stuff about, you know, having an Uber to the studio every day from a neighborhood out, you know, in kind of, I guess, I wouldn't say a bad neighborhood, but an interesting neighborhood in LA. So there's definitely the not being able to go home in between and you know, just having your kind of like creature comforts.
In my mind, the biggest positive was almost what the opposite of kind of what Henry's saying is the lack of home. It really just locks you into this headspace of you wake up, you go to the studio, you go home, you sleep 6 days a week. You
had really like a
had
job.
Sunday off. Yeah. That's right. It's like it reminds you that you're there to work. We did the back end of the last album because of COVID, like at home, and you feel the relaxed nature of an environment like that, which is cool.
Relaxed.
But it's relaxed, we could argue a lot of it was too relaxed, you know, and at the time you don't notice this, of course, but you know, in hindsight's 2020, of course, and you kind of go, oh, you know, because you realize you're not pushing yourself, you know, and then it's like you get distracted because a girlfriend's showing up or mum's showing up or whoever. It's like we just looked at each other's faces and Josh and Steve, the studio engineer, for 5 weeks, 6 days a week, you know, and that's all you do: live, breathe, eat the music and the recording process.
I want to talk about one of the products of that hyperfocus, and that is the song Mo Mokua. And I love the video for this track. I think it's a very compelling video. I think the way the story structured is really beautiful. Is that a real Moku Mokai in that video?
No. It's about as real as this. It's made out of like, it was totally compressible. It was super weird. Pulled it out of a box and it like inflated, and I was like,
was that quite like surreal?
Yeah, I didn't
it. It felt wrong to hold.
Yeah,
I was I mean, obviously it's super realistic, right? But then you touch it and it's this like squishy
foam.
And it was like, man, this is so out the gate. But I mean, the guys who are in charge of making that did an absolutely killer job on it.
Yeah, I didn't even want to touch it. I don't think I touched it once. I was like, it still gave me like heebie-jeebies, even though it was fake.
A little bit tougher.
Yeah, that's right. We all had this, like, it created this atmosphere, you know, and you're like, oh, gosh, and you know it's fake. But with all the setting as well, you know, so you've got these two people who are playing heads tradesmen, it kind of puts you in this headspace of imagining what the people who did that for real, you know, and that was kind of, ugh.
Was it something that you three began with and then a creative team came along and kind of helped out with? I mean, what was the story? You know, how did that develop?
For the most part, I wrote most of that song based off of my own experiences with facial moko. Because lyrically, the song itself is more about, it's kind of a pride anthem. It's not specifically about the head trade. It's a more general song about the oppression of the tradition. When it came to the video, I had these other ideas, and my initial ideas were kind of like the headlines of a newspaper, like coming to life. Think like the Harry Potter movies, how the newspapers are like living and stuff. And those were my initial ideas, but to try and transition through like the real headlines that have happened with people, you know, turning away from restaurants because of moko, all moko's gang members and blah blah blah, the negative stuff, and transitioning through to like the positive stuff. But when we pitched it to our director and creative team, they actually then kind of totally flipped it on its head and gave us
the main was like, nah, let's do this.
He was like, let's do like a heist thing. So actually, yeah, so the bulk of that concept came about through the creative team over with Jermaine and Piotrek, our master of photography, who Piotrek has done pretty much every live action video that the boys have done, at least filmed in New Zealand.
There's about two videos that he hasn't done of ours. One was prior to us even meeting him, and then the other one we filmed in like Finland.
It was Finland, I think. Yeah.
Shout out Finland. I really want to go to Finland. I've been learning to love it. Looks like a really
great place.
Lovely country, yeah.
Well, fun fact, it's the only other place in the world where we managed to get sunburned. Because they also have a hole in the ozone layer.
Oh, no. Really?
Not as big as New Zealand, but we did get burnt on that video shoot.
We did.
Wild, because we've been in Florida all day in the sun. Florida, and just
don't get burnt.
Kiwi skin doesn't care.
Just scaly, hard carapace.
Yeah, I'm sure I'd have a lot less freckles if I lived anywhere else in the world.
Now, you mentioned before that Lamb of God's Randy Blythe shows up. Yeah, he shows up on the song Tani Fat, kind of give a small spoken word, like nerdy metal bit. It's very, very poetic bit about kind of being killed by a Tani Fat. Where did the words for that come from? I mean, who made those?
All Randy. His two verses, so his spoken bit and then his actual like full-on heavy vocal verse, which is right before the final chorus, was all Randy. He was pretty hands-on with, like, because it was a bilingual song and about a Māori subject matter, as a fan of Māori history that he is, he was very cautious about making sure that, you know, what he was singing about was culturally appropriate and these sorts of things. But we never had any notes for him. You know, the first version he sent through was exactly what ended up on the record. We were like, these are great. He was like, I would love to add some Māori words if you can tell me how to pronounce them. So Taniwha and Taiaha were his two words that he added on. The best line in the whole song, dying beneath the shadow of the long white cloud, is such a hard line, you know, and it's a great line because it obviously shows knowledge and pays homage to Aotearoa as a word and as a name.
Couldn't have picked a better person to be on that track, honestly. Mm-hmm. And even in terms of like the pronunciation as well, I mean, he was like, oh, well, I just want to make sure I say it properly.
I want to touch on the politics here, because you've always been a political band, and on the new record there's no exception. I mean, there's songs like A Thousand Friends, which is about social media addiction, Crown, obviously about colonization, Black in Sky, there's warnings about World War III, and so on. Do you all see a bright future for these issues, or do you take a bit of a darker perspective, and I guess how does music help you digest these ideas?
You know, it's funny how many fans will see an interview like this, or see a post we've made on social media and suddenly get up in arms and go, you guys need to stop being political. I mean, Two had a little one on Twitter, and crazy how many people listen to the band and don't even have a thought about what the lyrics mean. So there's been people who've been listening to us for years, and they only just click because of a Twitter post that the band is political. So yeah, it's an interesting topic, which I'm sure, I don't know, some people listening to this interview might only just click and realize that what we're talking about is largely political, and if not, it's social commentary.
In terms of like, because that is an interesting thing, is, you know, sometimes this kind of, are we purposely political, or are we just singing about things that have happened? It's the truth. You know, there's no matter of opinion necessarily behind it. It's just colonization happened. Yep. Social media exists. The wars are happening right now. You know, all these things are happening. But in terms of like the how we're viewing these things we're talking about, it's kind of hard to tell, you know. To quote Tobias Forge of Ghost, I just saw an interview with him recently, and they kind of asked him the same question. And he talked about like these events and the people behind these events want you to think that they're kind of the end all be all event. But the war will happen, and eventually the war will end, and these things will move on. And us as the people really need to just focus on making sure that, you know, we are being the best people we can be, you know, whether it's world leaders, they won't be there forever. But the world has moved on for thousands and thousands of years, and hopefully the world will continue to move on for more many thousands of years. In the context of the songs on these albums, these are what are happening right now. So they're current events, you know.
There's always parallels as well that can be drawn. When it's all done and through, I mean, you know, half the stuff we sing about happened hundreds of years ago.
Right.
But it's still relatable today, and it's still something that people kind of vibe with and can relate to in a modern day setting.
Continuing on the political chat, you know, some people think that, you know, there's definitely some pretty nasty pockets of the metal audience. You know, it can get pretty right wing and pretty scary sometimes. So do you guys see yourselves as kind of breaking up that perception of some scenes of metal being a bit horribly right wing?
The unfortunate thing is I think because of what we do is we see it, particularly here at home, I think, you know, like it, we're reminded that that side of the metal community, it does exist. There's a sect of people that the only reason they do not listen to our music is because of the cultural content and their opinions towards things Maori or whatever, you know. I think the interesting mix comes from international audiences where, for example, if we were in America and we were the exact same band, but we were Native American, I feel like there are some people who are coming to the shows that wouldn't go to that band, but they come to us. So I think for a lot of people, there's like a disconnect between what it is that we're doing and the same concept over home because it's detached from there.
Yeah, they're natives from a different part of the world.
That's right, you know, so which it's is, like,
I think the same thing that happens with Sepultura and Soulfly as well. When you're from a different part of the world, you get this slightly more favorable view from some people.
That's right. Even if it was the exact same thing from their own hometown, they would not be a part of that. And then I think, you know, there's a romanticization that happens. I keep comparing it to like the Viking crowd with quotation marks, where people are sort of showing up and, you know, the only thing they know about Maori is we're warriors, and they're like, I want to be a warrior too. I'm so cool, strong guy, you know. And then they actually listen to the music beyond what they think, their perceived knowledge around things Maori, and then go, oh, this band's woke, you know. And like the issue that we just had on the past week, couple weeks ago, I was like, what band have you been listening to, you know? But then we think it's this kind of romanticization of culture, which of course happens all over the world for many different cultures, you know, particularly these perceived warrior cult thinks, you know, like the Japanese, the Scandinavian type situation with the Viking thing, and then of course Maori is a part of that now too. While it's great that what we do allows those who do not fit that bubble to have a place where they feel like they can go and enjoy a show, you know, and not have to be around those kinds of people. Because of that, it also, I feel like, allows us to see the parts of the community that are, unfortunately, those people.
It does sometimes rear its head as well, especially if we're doing support tours. This tour we just came off did have one show where there was a guy in the front row wearing a MAGA hat, which I promptly gave the middle finger to. But yeah, I think some people don't realize that there is metal out there that is not all of that kind of worldview.
I appreciate all your time and these fantastic nuanced comments. I'm so glad that you guys are keeping up the good fight and continuing to make some fantastic music. I really want to thank you for your time once more. And is there anything you'd like to finish off this corridor with?
Oh, I mean, yeah, thank you very much for the chat. It was great, and we can't wait for people to get stuck in, man. And again, yeah, stuck in. Get properly stuck in so you know the band that you're listening to and you can really absorb the stories we're trying to tell and the messages we're trying to, you know, spread.
Lyrics will be on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
With translations.
They're also in the description of all music videos.
Yep. Yeah, and go and pre-save the album as well. Pre-save the album on Spotify. Honestly, can't wait for people to hear it. I don't know when this is coming out, but if it is before we head out on tour, make sure you go and check us out live. We're going to be playing new songs off the album that haven't been released yet. It's a little gift to Aotearoa. We haven't played here in a long time, and it's, I feel, the least we can do is give people a bit of a taste before it's actually out.
Thank you very much for your time and for doing a national tour. Although I did see Dunedin, it's not on that list, unfortunately. That's okay.
It isn't this time.
Oh, yeah. That's all right. We're used
Queenstown
to
snaked
lists.
You up.
Classic Queenstown, being so alluring and charming. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on the program. Much appreciated.
Hey, no worries, Zach. Thank you.
Take care.
Alrighty, that was the chat I had with Henry De Jong and Turanga Morgan Edmonds from Alien Weaponry about their new album Terra, which is out right now. It came out this morning. Very, very, very awesome stuff. Super exciting. We've got Tanifa from that album featuring Randy Blythe from Lamb of God. It's going to play very, very shortly. And then maybe after that or another track, we'll have a chat with Serebii about his new album, Dime. Very exciting stuff. Lots of album chats. You're listening to The One. Keep it real.
More of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.